This is the son of PCJ. Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange new signals and to seek out new stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before. Well, hello, everyone. It's really nice to have you with us once again on the program. Coming up today, we're going to be bringing you some information on the call to end the ban on the international media coverage on reporting on Papua in Indonesia. We're going to hear from Tom Clark from the Australian Human Rights Law Center. June 29th was the final broadcast day of Radio Netherlands Worldwide. What was happening in the broadcast booth during the final broadcast? Well, Jonathan Marks was there, and he met up with Jonathan Gruber, who did the final announcement of Radio Netherlands programs in English. Also later on in the program, Dan Hansley will be joining us for a look at what's happening with propagation, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, the show that plugs you in but never tunes you out. First, here's Paulette McQuarrie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
On June 29th, Radio Netherlands World signed off in English, broadcasting for the last time after a 65-year run. Budget cuts from 46 to 14 million euros have brought their English language broadcasts to an end. The final broadcast included a look at some of the most historic moments from the station's history, going back to 1947. On an earlier broadcast, which aired on satellite and online, they also ran editions of His and Hers with Dodie and Jerry Cowan, Media Network with Jonathan Marks, Happy Station with Tom Mayer, and many other shows that were popular on the station. That final English program, however, was the only one that was broadcast on shortwave. It was a retrospective of some of the station's greatest moments. Rob Kiewit, the producer of the final hour, says there was an outpouring of warm greetings from listeners around the world.
We're getting hundreds, literally hundreds of reactions on our website, even as the program is being aired. We're getting loads of reactions on Facebook, very, very many of a personal nature, and also lots of sympathy from listeners and readers with our fate, our individual fate. And emails, of course, are pouring in all the time. My colleague Tim Fisher is upstairs working his way through a huge pile of printed letters. People are still sending envelopes with stamps on and nice signatures below their letters, and it's a joy to behold. It's great to know that we are still loved by so many people, even though, you know, we've grown a lot smaller than we were.
Radio Netherlands' new focus will be on providing help to areas where the media has a difficult time to get free and unbiased information. The changes will take effect January 1st, 2013. BBC World Service journalists have been asked to come up with money-making ideas to help increase revenues for the corporation's international services. This has led to fears over editorial independence. Peter Horrocks, the director of BBC World News, sent an email to the 2,400 staff working in the division, which includes the World Service, BBC World News Channel, and BBC.com. In the email, he said they need to consider income and exploit new commercial opportunities to maximize the value they create with their journalism. Horrocks' email lists income as one of the four objectives staff must consider when they prepare for upcoming appraisal meetings with their managers. I would like each of you to contribute to the delivery of these objectives. Let us know if you have any ideas on how we can strengthen our commercial focus and grow income. These objectives apply to all parts of global news, editorial and non-editorial, as no matter where you work, you can help meet these objectives, Horrocks wrote. A BBC spokesman said journalists had not been ordered to come up with money-making schemes. He said no one had been given financial targets and editorial independence would not be compromised. He added that the BBC's public service mission to provide impartial and independent news would always take precedence over wider commercial goals, and nothing in the email suggested anything different. Ukrainian Prime Minister Mykola Azarov, in a meeting last month with Euronews CEO Michael Peters, said that he is interested in bringing more reliable information about Ukraine to Europe. That is why, in his opinion, it is necessary to develop the Ukrainian version of Euronews. We want Europe to know more about Ukraine, said Azarov. We are interested in developing relations with Euronews and would like to see information about Ukraine be, first of all, objective, he underscored. According to Azarov, Euro 2012 has given more opportunities to open Ukraine to the West and to deny the previously distributed information about the alleged propensity of racism, crime, high prices in Ukraine, and so on, which scared away tourists. However, many fans have come and have been in Ukraine for a week now, and we made sure that there is no racism, nobody is killed here, and the prices are quite affordable, lower than in Europe, and everything is not as bad as they imagined, the premier said. Azarov also noted that he likes the political and economic news by Euronews, although he takes information from various media. Peters, in turn, expressed interest in receiving prompt comments from members of the Ukrainian government for the Euronews channel. As Western newspapers and broadcasters close bureaus, cut staff, and erect paywalls, the emerging media companies owned by the Communist Party of China, the Emir of Qatar, and Vladimir Putin's Kremlin continue to expand their influence and reach, according to Mark McKinnon, a reporter for the Toronto-based Globe and Mail. I first noticed it a few years ago while I was based in the Middle East, said McKinnon. English-language newspapers there started relying less on reports from the proven likes of the Associated Press and Reuters, a decision presumably motivated by cost. In their place were cheaper English-language stories from the Xinhua Newswire, articles that subtly or unsubtly inserted the Communist Party's take on global events into an otherwise anodyne news story. Many hotels in Southeast Asia have taken to including RT or Russia Today news in their cable packages, often as the only English-language news channel available. This isn't about who rakes in the advertising dollars. There's precious few of those these days for anyone. It's about the global conversation and who gets to frame it. It's not too far-fetched to imagine a near future where it's Xinhua or Russia Today rather than the Associated Press or BBC that have the only correspondents on the scene of an international crisis, meaning the world will only get Beijing or Moscow's version of what's happening. If you want more on these and other stories, we invite you to check out Kim Andrew Elliott's media blog. You can find a link to it at www.pcjmedia.com. That's the news for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in North America, and Sky Digital in the UK. For more details on stations that broadcast this program, check out our website at www.pcjmedia.com. Recently, a small protest was held for the visit of Indonesian President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono in Darwin, Australia. The protesters held West Papuan flags and chanted slogans criticizing Indonesia's treatments of independence campaigners in the Indonesian province. Meanwhile, Australian NGO, the Human Rights Law Centre, says Prime Minister Julia Gillard should press the President of Indonesia to end a ban on international media reporting from Papua. Tom Clark from the Human Rights Law Centre speaks next to Radio Australia's Liam Cochrane.
There's basically an effective ban that prevents international journalists from travelling to and reporting from West Papua. So this means it's very hard for the international community to get a reliable idea of exactly what's happening on the ground in West Papua. But all the reports that are coming through are painting a really grim picture. We know that there's been many human rights violations over a number of years, and a lot of Papuans are really denied basic political freedoms. A classic example being simply raising the Morning Star flag, that's the West Papua independence flag, can land you 15 years in jail. And that's happened to a number of West Papuan activists. More recently, a prominent West Papuan activist was shot dead by Indonesian authorities. And this has sparked another wave of violence in the province. So there really is a feeling that Papua is a bit of a tinderbox at the moment, and the resentments are really running high. And we as an organisation are calling on Prime Minister Gillard to use this opportunity, use this meeting with the Indonesian President to actually start to address some of these issues and use our constructive relationship with Indonesia to really encourage Indonesia to look at how they could do things differently and basically try to end the violence that's unfolding there.
We were told here at Radio Australia that during the recent coverage of the violent clashes and the killing of the West Papuan activist, that that there are some officials that, who are more open to the idea of allowing foreign media into Papua. Is there a range of views on this amongst Indonesian officials?
Certainly, and I think if you look at the democratic progress that's been made in Indonesia over the last decade or so, there have been fantastic steps forward within Indonesia. However, a lot of those democratic reforms haven't made their way to West Papua. So Indonesians living in Jakarta will enjoy certain human rights that people in West Papua aren't enjoying. But there are definitely voices, progressive voices within Indonesia that are calling on more reforms and calling on more freedoms for the West Papuan people. And I think that really presents the question to the Australian government is who does Australia want to side with? Do we want to continue to turn a blind eye to the human rights abuses that are occurring on our doorstep and provide the Indonesian military with training and equipment? Or do we want to actually help and encourage those progressive voices within Indonesia that are calling on for more democratic reforms and basically so that Papuans can enjoy fundamental human rights that everyone should?
Do you think that Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard has the ability to influence President Yudhoyono on this issue?
I believe so. I think at this stage anything will help in terms of bringing the world's attention to the problems of West Papua. I think the more leaders around the world that are willing to raise the issue and to highlight some of the problems, that's only going to have a positive effect. And the Australian government really like to talk up their special relationship with Indonesia. And so I think if that's the case, we really have a duty or a moral obligation to raise these issues. Australia has been quite a principled advocate for human rights in other parts of the world, but when it comes to places a little closer to home, we seem a lot more reluctant to speak out in fear of upsetting the relationship with Indonesia. But I think really, if we're good friends, we can have a robust and frank discussion and highlight some of our concerns.
Tom Clark from the Australian NGO Human Rights Law Centre, speaking with Radio Australia's Liam Cochrane.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya, and nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 99.55 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
June 29th saw the final English language broadcast from Radio Netherlands Worldwide on shortwave. For that special program, they did a few things. On their 24-hour satellite and internet feed, which no longer exists, they went back into the archives and aired some of the most popular programs on Radio Netherlands, or as it was once called, Radio Nederland. For the final program on shortwave, they presented a special program that was presented by Dira Sujan, looking back at the station's history. For the last broadcast, that went out. Jonathan Gruber, host of The State We're In, was to read the final farewell for Radio Netherlands. What was going on behind the scenes, and what was it like in the studio? Jonathan Marks headed to Radio Netherlands and sat down with Jonathan Gruber. And we also take a listen to the final moments of their last broadcast.
I'm with Jonathan Gruber of Radio Netherlands Worldwide, at least for a little while.
For a little while.
Where are we? And what's happening?
Well, right now we're on the first floor of Radio Netherlands. What's happening is that the clock is running down on Radio Netherlands' actual broadcasts. That is to say, the shortwave broadcasts are coming to an end. Not just the shortwave broadcasts, the web stream, more or less everything that has to do with actual direct broadcast is coming to a close in no less than. I'm looking up the clock now. No less than. Well, I can't do numbers. Let's say 51 minutes, 52 minutes, like that.
So, meanwhile, downstairs in continuity, they are playing out an audio file.
Yes, something nostalgic, yeah.
Which is going in the direction of Africa on shortwave and the rest of the world via satellite.
That sounds about the size of it, yeah. Plus, there's also extra shortwave transmissions going out to North America right now and I believe other parts of the world, but I don't really know.
And as you can probably gather, there's a little party going on in the background, or it's actually a sort of swan song. And what are you going to do in 51 minutes' time?
Well, in 51 minutes' time, the last nostalgic program is going to come to an end. And then I have about 3 minutes to sum up the profundity that is Radio Netherlands' impact on the world over the last 65 years, not to mention the fact that the station actually goes all the way back to about 1927. So I have to do justice to that in about 3 minutes with my limited abilities. This is what I have to do. This is my task. This is my mission.
What happens after today for you?
For me personally, I'm not one of the people who has been made redundant. Having said that, the show that I work for, the state we're in, which is hands down the best thing I've ever worked on at Radio Netherlands, and I just think it's an amazing program, is endangered. It's not completely out of the woods. Decisions have to be made about it, and if the show does not go ahead, then I think for me personally, I don't think I have a future here anymore, and I will be asked to be let go.
Yeah, very sad, very sad.
It is sad. It is sad because I worked here with great pleasure for many, many years. But let's face it, I mean, I agreed with almost nothing that this last government did, but I kind of actually agreed with these cuts because I felt more than 5 years ago, a colleague of mine, Michelle Ernsting, and I were sitting in a car, and it's 2006, and we both agreed that if something drastic didn't happen at Radio Netherlands, that they were just going to shut us down, and they'd be right to do so. And so that's the reason why we decided to turn the whole English department around and throw our resources behind things that we could market and that would have no need for shortwave broadcasting whatsoever. Now, we absolutely did that, but unfortunately, the cuts that did come when they came were so drastic that even saving the shows that can stand on their own and will not be affected by the loss of shortwave whatsoever, even those shows are endangered as well.
Did Radio Netherlands stay on shortwave too long?
Yeah, I do think Radio Netherlands stayed on shortwave too long. I think in order to be relevant, you have to be ahead of the game, not behind the game. That if you stay on a medium for too long or you invest too much in that medium for too long, you become perceived to be associated with that medium. And if shortwave is perceived to be a dinosaur, well, then Radio Netherlands is a dinosaur right along with it. I think Radio Netherlands could have saved itself had it acted 10 years ago. It probably would have gotten away with it had it acted 5 years ago. But it didn't even think about acting until the middle of last year when the government had already decided to get rid of it. It's just really too little, too late. A classic case of that.
Turn on the radio.
Radio Netherlands, 24 hours a day.
Turn it up! Turn it up! A little bit higher. Radio.
On the radio and in the car.
Yes.
And he starts until you say, give Eddie 10 seconds.
Right. Well, actually, why don't you, after she starts at exactly 2:52.
Yeah.
Start it.
Yeah.
And then give it just like 5 seconds.
Okay,
fade
so,
it down.
Yeah. And then...
It's and then I'll talk, and then we'll have it come up for 10 seconds, and then I will talk to the bells.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And then when I keep the bells, if the bells start before
early,
I talk,
I keep them down.
You just keep them down and then fade them up until I say, going to start the bells.
Yeah. And then the bells.
And then I'll do the rest
Carillion.
Of it.
Carillion.
Yeah. The Carillion, yeah.
Yes, Bredar, 1985. I was there at the recording.
Were you really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. 10 seconds.
Rob Kiewit was responsible for the immense undertaking of delving through our archives for the making of this program, and engineer Rick Kingmar for putting it together. I'm Dira Sajan. On behalf of my colleagues, past and present, I'd like to thank you all for listening and wish you one final goodbye from Radio Netherlands, worldwide.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. I'm Jonathan Gruber. Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. There. I've said it for nearly the last time after 65 years
on the air. The truth is, though, is that our pedigree goes back to the dawn of radio, and that's why we're playing Eddie Starts' Nice Cup of Tea, his signature tune from Happy Station, which itself started in 1927 as part of PCJ Radio. We're coming to you now live from Cell Fear or Studio 4, and this is the little studio from which we broadcast everything, at least since I've been here, everything, even since we automated our broadcasts. It's all come from right here in this little room. So it is fitting that we end here live. And we're just minutes from the very end of the very last broadcast of Radio Netherlands in English. Dutch has already closed, and most of the other services are closing down as well today. And there's been a party atmosphere at the station. This will be in stark contrast with the silence of the near-empty building come Monday. And for this last broadcast, this is how we're going to go out. Right now, we're going to start the bells. I'm sure that most of you recognize this. It's Merk Toch Hoesterk, our interval signal that would announce Radio Netherlands' arrival to the shortwaves. And we'll play the bells to the end. And when they finish, we'll do something a little different. We'll play the Dutch national anthem, De Wilhelmus. And then there will be silence. You won't hear from us again on shortwave. But this isn't the end. Our new task, for the few of us who are left behind, will be to build something new and ambitious. For 65 years, we have been a broadcaster that has had the tremendous good fortune to be totally editorially independent. We were never a government mouthpiece. This was a rare thing during the heydays of shortwave, and it is today. So, as of Monday, we are being asked to look at the world and to search for places where the media is less than free and lend a hand. And in some cases, we'll be going to them. And where that's not possible, we will help them come to us. It's a worthy task, and I, for one, am happy to do it because, frankly, that's what we were doing anyway. Right? Hundreds of you have written in over the last weeks. We've read all your comments, and we feel really great about them. So thank you so much for writing. And above all, thank you for listening. Thank you for valuing what we did. Thank you for letting us know it was worthwhile. We are profoundly moved, and we hope that sometimes we moved you too. As Dr. Seuss said, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And so, on behalf of all of us here, for the last time from Hilversum in Holland, this is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye!
Here's to Radio Netherlands.
And that piece on the final broadcast day of Radio Netherlands Worldwide comes to us courtesy of Jonathan Marks. I invite you to check out Jonathan's Critical Distance blog. You can find a link for them at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com. Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Dan Hensley.
On July 7th, the 10.7 centimeter flux will be 135. July 8th, 130. July 9th, 135. July 10th, 140. July 11th, 145. July 12th, 140, and July 13th, 130. The A index starts out at 5 on July 7th and then rises to 8 on July 8th and 9th. The rest of the week from July 10th to July 13th, the A index will be 5. The KP index starts out at 2 on July 7th, rising to 3 on July 8th and 9th. From July 10th to July 13th, we will see a KP index of 2. There are 4 new sunspot groups this week. 1512 is passing out of view with 1513, 1515, and 1517 in view. Sunspot 1515 has a delta-class magnetic field that harbors energy for X-class solar flares. The sunspot itself is huge, stretching more than 100,000 kilometers, or 8 Earth diameters, from end to end. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory shows the behemoth growing and turning toward Earth over the past few days. If any X-class flares do occur during this reporting period, they will certainly be Earth-directed. The sunspot is directly facing our planet. Radio blackouts, sudden ionospheric disturbances, and geomagnetic storms could be very realistic in the near future. As of July 3rd, a coronal hole was observed. By this time you hear the report, a solar wind will have already reached Earth from this coronal hole.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. If you wish to contact us, our email address is very simple, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can also check out all past editions by going to the website for the show at www.pcjmedia.com/all one word. And I say Media Network Plus is all one word because we did have somebody that commented saying they couldn't get to it because they kept putting dashes after media and after network and after plus. Very silly thing to do. Anyway, on behalf of Dan Hensley and Paulette McQuarrie, this is Keith Pallon wishing you well, hoping that you join us again in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.